Hello and welcome to the Interfish Podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling headlines from the seafood industry. I'm Drew Cherry, Editor-in-Chief. I am joined today by Executive Editor John Fiorillo. We are going to look this week at inflation, which is everywhere in all our lives, across the world, and certainly in seafood. We are going to be looking at just a few species today and what we see as some shocking trends that will impact, no doubt, the industry this year and in years to come. So we had an interview with a Rabobank analyst this week who talked about some of his forecasts and prognoses for both the global farm salmon industry as well as the farm shrimp industry. And the figures were striking. They are projecting some significantly large jumps in prices, not just this year, but going forward. According to the analyst, the amount of growth in farm salmon prices will push prices up to a level that have not been seen in 5 years, since 2016. So we're talking about a major lift up in the amount of money people are going to be paying for their salmon. But again, also same type of forecast for shrimp and other species. So let's start there and drill down a little bit. John, we've discussed inflation. We're actually in the middle of writing more about inflation as we speak. Wages, packaging, you name it, everything's going up. But today, raw materials. So what were your takeaways from the Rabobank analysis and some of the other stories that came out this week about supply growth in salmon and other species?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, we'll start on the consumer side with demand, which I thought would kind of dampen as we emerge from COVID a little bit. And now that restaurants are open, you know, maybe not full force, but you certainly can go to a restaurant anytime you want, in the U.S. at least. So I thought things would start to kind of balance out a little bit, but that demand that was experienced at the retail level for seafood during 2020 and much of 2021 has really not dissipated. It's clawed back a little bit, but not enough to, you know, affect overall demand for this. So On that end, it doesn't look like we're going backwards as far as demand. So now it, on the supply side, can it keep up? It has been to this point, at least for salmon and shrimp and some of the major species. But prices have risen along the line too as well. So you're starting to wonder, you know, where things will head, because and I'll let you delve into this a little bit, because I think you have a better handle on this than I do. But when you look at salmon in particular, farm salmon specifically, there's not a lot of room to boost production. So what's that going to look like against this surging demand?
Right. And, you know, supply growth actually is going to be negative in the first half of this year. We haven't seen that for a long, long time. And that's primarily driven by Norway. This last year did have a kind of a surprise jump in growth, Rabobank noted. And so it's looking like we're actually going to be going the other direction. There's been a lot of warnings by market watchers and by analysts and by the industry itself that the amount of fish that is going to be produced in the future is going to be limited from the salmon farming industry. There's simply not enough appetite in Norway, Chile, Scotland, Canada, for growth, because of regulations and because of new additional restrictions on all kinds of aspects of the industry to make it a bit more sustainable and more palatable to the communities where they operate. You know, what we are also seeing more and more is while disease used to be a major X factor in the volume of fish that's available, we're now seeing that climate change is a major X factor. So we have seen warm water die-offs in New Zealand and in Canada. Of course, we've got algal blooms in Chile. We've had them in Norway. This is not a situation where supply is going to keep going, and it's certainly not going to open up quickly. Chile is expected to grow, but that's going to take some time, and it certainly doesn't offset where the output is in other regions where these restrictions have been in place, or where there's a very good chance that they won't see the same kind of growth that they have in the past. So just to put some numbers behind it too, John, while we're on salmon, the U.S. market continues to grow. It's the single largest market in terms of single largest country for salmon imports. So it's a pretty good litmus test and a pretty good measuring stick of what actually is happening with salmon prices. And I'll just give you some import numbers from 2021 versus 2020. The caveat there, of course, is that 2020 was the big full COVID year. But that said, one would think that with the economic impacts that we saw in 2021, that we might see some demand falling off. We might see we might see some turning away from higher price fish. That did not happen. So looking at Chile, the largest exporter of salmon into the U.S., the value of salmon imports was up 33% in 2021, hitting $2.4 billion, which is a very, very high mark. And that is why when the volume went up 7%. So we have 7% growth in volume imports, 33% growth in that value. So doing the math there, we have fish that's a lot more valuable. And that goes across the board, less so from Canada, which is the second largest exporter behind Chile. Canada also saw its value climb 25%. Its volume only rose 12%. Norway up 26% by value and 21% by volume. So across the board, you are seeing that that salmon is costing more in 2021 than it did in 2020, and that extends for quite some time. When you look at the actual prices, you know, we're through week five, we were at NOK 73 on average. That's a NASDAQ weekly salmon index. And that is significantly higher than we saw in 2020, significantly higher than we saw in 2021, 2018. I mean, this is a high water mark for this week in 6 years. You know, this is according to the NASDAQ figures. Now, this isn't the highest price that's been hit in the past 6 years. But boy, it's not very far off. The highest price recorded by, at least by the NASDAQ, the average NASDAQ index is a slightly over 80 NOK per kilogram. So, you know, we're at 73 and things seem to be pushing up. So I guess the question is, what is that mark? Where is that ceiling when consumers start to turn away? Salmon's a good benchmark because it is actively traded fresh in consistent volumes. So it's a canary in the coal mine about seafood prices and what the market can bear. But John, what is that ceiling if consumers continue to be willing to pay this much in a time when they're paying more for everything and theoretically, or at least macroeconomically, have less money in their pocket?
Yeah, I mean, in salmon's favor, the proteins that it competes against at retail in particular are also surging. Beef is up double digits month to month for a while throughout 2021, and it's still very, very high compared to where it normally sits. Same with poultry and pork. So it's in a climate in a competitive climate where at least the other proteins are either surging more from an inflation point of view, or at least at the same level. But you and I were talking the other day. I think I try to take the lens out a little bit and look a little longer view at this. And you mentioned a little bit ago that, traditional net pen salmon farming, it is the engine of production globally. It accounts for the lion's share of all the salmon produced. And as you said, it's capping out, whether it be through regulation or whatever, the ability to grow net pen production globally is reaching a cap. Now, the theory is that land-based and offshore and closed containment, those other forms of production will come in and, augment supply and production and keep it growing. Well, okay, let's say that's true. There's still going to be many, many years between now and when those others come online in a significant way to fill that void. So what happens during those years when, we can't produce any more net pen salmon, by any significant means, but we really don't have these other forms of production online at a scalable size to make a difference? That, to me, is an interesting question, and what it could do to the price of salmon, obviously could send it through the roof.
Yeah, and it, again, it could drive that innovation that you're talking about. That it could be that the CapEx and the sort of outlay of investment that you have to make to move things to increase land base or offshore closed containment, that might kick into higher gear. And I think that's what we might see as we start getting to this supply shock area for farm salmon, and it may come sooner than we think. I mean, with this level of demand, and without having without having places to grow, you're gonna hit a ceiling. I don't know what that ceiling is. You don't know what that ceiling is. And it seems like consumers, as of now, haven't hit it. And it could be also, like, let's think about what other innovations this requires from an industry when you move away from when you have a commodity and you're trying to get increased value from it. That's when you start developing brands. That's when you start putting more money into value-added products. So there are ways that are beyond just straight volume to get additional value and to extend the penetration of these products into the marketplace. So we're seeing a lot of growth and movement on that, which also has to do with the consumer willingness to pay a higher price for salmon.
But the one thing about that, Drew, is salmon has become, people have said it before. This is not I'm not coining a phrase here, but it's become chicken-like in the sense that it's ubiquitous now. Consumers, when they think of seafood, they generally think of shrimp, kind of, but salmon now. Let's get salmon tonight. So, value-adding and all that's good, but the market is such now that the demand just for the commodity product itself is so strong and probably never going backward, that you have to feed that beast at that level. Whether you do value adding or anything else, there's still such a high demand just for the commodity product itself, you know, fillets in most cases, that, you know, the supply, so much of the supply is already just dedicated to that alone.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about shrimp just for a second, because as I mentioned at the top, we also are seeing a lot of momentum for shrimp. Rabobank projected that we're going to see a significant increase both in output and demand, which are very closely linked because of the short turnaround time for raising shrimp versus salmon, which is over a year, year and a half. So you can see things move very, very quickly and react very, very quickly in the shrimp sector. But, you know, just looking around in European and North American markets, looking at the prices of shrimp, they also, on the consumer side of things, have just skyrocketed. I'm not sure who is willing to outlay this kind of money for a bag of shrimp, but somebody out there is willing to do it, clearly. But you're talking, you know, over 20 US dollars for bags of shrimp at times, you know, for what would maybe give you maybe a meal and a half, two meals possibly. And that's just your protein. But is there any feeling, you know, on your side of thinking, kind of taking the same logic as salmon, what kind of shrimp do you think it has the same elasticity as salmon does? Do you think that it could reach some ceiling and bounce way back, or does it play in a different sphere?
Shrimp is kind of interesting, and it was mentioned in the article you referenced that the shrimp sector globally can turn on a dime. And I thought that was a brilliant description of it, because we'll take the recent year or so. Shrimp production has been great in Asia and South America. It's just been, you know, humming right along. Imports into the U.S. are almost hit 900,000 metric tons in 21, up from 745,000 metric tons in 2020. I mean, these are, you know, that's a 20% jump. That's a massive jump. But the market absorbed it all, and it absorbed it all at higher prices, as you mentioned. So we're in that same scenario where this demand side, we've never seen anything like this. This demand side, which, you know, strengthened at retail during the height of COVID because people stayed home, blah, 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 has continued at retail for the most part, but now has the whole food service demand side pouring in as well. So however, you and I have been around long enough to know that shrimp farmers, when the prices are good, when they're getting good prices for their shrimp, they tend to plant more for coming seasons. And oftentimes the result from that is then they have too much. And then they flood the market and drive the prices down. And so that dynamic, as I mentioned earlier, the industry can turn on a dime. That dynamic is out there in my mind, kind of sitting out there. Whether it becomes reality, I don't know. You know, I can't say. But as long as demand is where it is, you know, they're in good shape. I'm fascinated by this demand. You know, and it's not just here. You know, we report that demand throughout Europe for seafood took off during COVID and remains, you know, above 2019 levels. And just the other day, we had a report out of Russia where the same dynamic is happening. You know, I'm just hard pressed to understand it besides, you know, what everybody has been saying. They got comfortable cooking seafood at home and it's healthy and blah, blah, blah. All true. Absolutely all true. But does that explain this explosion in demand completely? I don't know.
You know, it's interesting. I think Seafish, which is a trade association for the UK seafood industry, releases monthly stats, really, really useful, interesting stats on retail sales. And just to this point about what consumers will pay and what they're willing to pay, you know, there's sometimes some flashing red lights here. You know, it's hard to get all the information that you need from every single market. Nielsen tracks a lot of this. IRI does. It's those groups both have a lot of this information, but it's difficult market to market to drill down and interpret. So just looking at Seafish's stats, which are really nicely organized, let's look at cod, which also is seeing a massive jump this year versus last year. Again, because of demand, it's fresh season in Norway for cod, and you're seeing prices continue to rise over the past year. So let's take a look at cod, for example. You're seeing the price per kilogram is up. This is across the entire cod category. Price per kilogram is up around 2%. Versus on the volume sales side of a negative 2% decline. So that tells us that yes, consumers are willing to pay more if they're up on. You see, frozen cod prices per kilogram are up 1.6%. Chilled cod up 1.4%. Frozen fish fingers, codfish fingers up 4.6%. And you look at that and you say, yeah, this is a really promising thing. We are seeing price per kilogram rise. We're seeing more willingness to purchase these products at retail. But let's take the example of the cod fish fingers. Now, there can be a lot of different factors as to why this happens. So we should have some asterisks here because there are a lot of different things can happen. Products can get delisted, et cetera, et cetera. But let's take the frozen cod fingers or frozen fish sticks, basically made out of cod. Fish fingers in the UK, fish sticks in the US. So we've got, as I said, 4.6% rise there in price per kilogram. But then look at the overall volume sales, and those have gone down very, very sharply. So you've got volume sales down 20%. And that just says, okay, yes, more per kilogram. How long can you continue to squeeze that out? You actually saw as well over the past 52 weeks, you saw the overall value fall of sales of frozen fish fingers on cod, which tells you, you know, again, people are buying less of it. So even if your price per kilogram remains inflated and remains higher, it doesn't mean things are necessarily going in the right direction. There's a lot of red on these statistics about retail sales in terms of the volumes, and that could be a little bit of a warning sign for the industry and a lot of different species.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's just, we are in this amazing pattern of, you know, strong demand, strong prices, strong production. You don't see it very often, and it's just hard to predict what will change first. You know, and it's different for every species, as you mentioned. But again, my fascination at the moment is with this demand and what that looks like 8 months from now as compared to today. Will it be as strong? I mean, we saw some weakening at the tail end of 2021 for certain, you know, fresh and frozen items. Canned slacked off a while ago, but it's still, you know, fairly strong compared to 2019. But at what point will something significantly change on the demand side? I don't know, but that's kind of where I'm watching things right now, because production, you know, it's going to vary year to year depending on things, but this demand, like I said, we've not seen before. So it's fascinating in the sense of like, how long can this wonderful thing last?
Well, you know, what goes up, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll just have to see. And I think this is going to be an interesting year for it because inflation just on a macro scale is in the headlines and everyone is increasingly aware of costs going up and just food inflation in general. Does that lift the tolerance for people to pay the premium typically that you pay for seafood versus, say, chicken or some forms of beef? I don't know. And as you said, this volume and this demand, is it coming from just people getting more comfortable eating it and buying it at stores? There's some reports that that's kind of what's happening. Is it on more menus? There's still a lot of questions to be asked, like you said, about this demand, but it appears that it is in some segments holding. So overall, the British Frozen Food Association, so this isn't drilled down specifically onto frozen fish, but in general, in the UK, the frozen food sector did well last year, continued to hold its gains, and it doesn't appear that there's any big drop off that we might have expected. I think canned seafood, probably we're going to see that get come back down to earth. I think we already have, John, isn't that correct? So I don't expect to see the same kind of enthusiasm for every single kind of product. But in general, it does seem that for now, if the seafood industry plays its cards right, they can expect some continued strong wind in their sales.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've said it on many podcasts, but again, who would ever have thought the best marketing for seafood would be a global pandemic? But there you have it. That got the ball really rolling.
Strange, but appears true. Well, let's wrap it up there. So next week, we on the 17th have our seafood logistics event. That's free to attend. You just need to go on to interfishevents.com and you can find a link to the Seafood Shipping and Logistics Forum and sign up there. It is at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. London, 4 p.m. CET. Register and join us for that. We've got a great lineup of speakers that are going to give us some ideas of what's going to happen in the supply chain in the coming year. We've got Tua Barfod. He's the global head of fish and seafood cargo at Maersk Line, one of the world's largest shipping companies. We also are joined by Morten Jensen of Insula, whitefish supplier. Glenn Klepp, he's a head of procurement and logistics at Regal Springs. Michael Lieberman, who's with the FOA and Sun Corporation. And then also Stora Enso, that is a sponsor of the event, and they'll be talking about sustainable shipping as well. So it's going to be a really, really interesting look. We've got John Evans, our correspondent, who's going to be moderating this. John really has been doing a fantastic job covering the supply chain shocks over the past year. So I'm really looking forward to hearing the discussions and learning about where things are headed as well. So again, that is on February 17th on Thursday, 3 p.m. London time, interfishevents.com if you want to sign up. And then don't forget, interfish.com is where we are 24/7 with reporters in bureaus around the world. We're able to get you news from every division and every area of the supply chain. So you can get us there. You can sign up for our newsletters. Just click our menu and you can see our whole host of newsletters there. And then social media, you can find us on LinkedIn. We have an Intrafish group there. We have a seafood and aquaculture group. So get on there, join them, join the discussion. That's where we have a lot of great chats and a lot of our great coverage. We let users know on that channel. So thanks all for joining us. Thank you, John. And we'll speak to you next time.